When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenas, buenas, mis amores. This is Vico Ortiz, host of Date My Abuelita First. Each week, myself, alongside our resident abuelita, Liliana Montenegro.
Esa soy yo.
Play matchmaker for a group of hopeful romantics in this fun, flirty, and hilarious game show. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps. Listen to Date My Abuelita First on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We always like to say you are here because we hope you are. And we are very excited today to introduce you to several of our fellow conspiracy realists. We are going to we're going to talk about the possibilities of time travel, which is always a trip for us. Check out our earlier episodes on that. There's some fantastic news that one of our pals has hipped us to. We're also going to talk horror movies because we love them. We exist in the land of eternal Halloween and have no regrets nor compunctions about that. But before we do any of that, Matt, Noel, codename Doc.
Ben.
Oh, okay, cool. Also, we had a lot of people. I think we hit a porcine nerve when we talked about super pigs.
That took a minute. Sorry.
Porcine, right? It doesn't sound like pig, but that's what
related,
it means.
Relating to pork.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So why don't we open up with an excellent series of emails from one fellow conspiracy realist who chooses to go by the code name Jägermeister. And before we get into this, got to tell you, bud, you brought up some really intense sense memories when we heard your code name, because Jägermeister is a period in our collective lives that I don't think any of us are in a hurry to relive.
Sense memory, indeed. Yeah. Get that taste out of my mouth.
I know. I remember personally many years ago, I was dating a girl whose father looked exactly like Charles Manson, and he lived in a little trailer in a rural airfield. It was a very different time. And his thing was Jägermeister. And so we could hang out and drink. I mean, to be honest, we were not drinking age. We could hang out and drink with this guy, but only if we drank Jägermeister or Goldschlager, which he would accept as a substitute. Yeah,
that should be considered a crime against humanity.
Well, it's definitely a crime to give underage children booze in general.
Adding insult to injury, you know? I mean, give them something good.
This is why I don't talk too much about my personal life. I feel like everything I say just makes things sound increasingly sketchy. But with this in mind, Jägermeister, we're going to go with your code name, and we invite you to explore other alcoholic spirits. You know, the world is yours. Be the change, bro. Okay, so here's what Jägermeister says. Hey guys, first off, just wanted to say I love the show. My name is Hunter, or codename Jägermeister. Feel free to use either name. Honestly, respectfully, I think we're probably going to go with Hunter. I recently got into listening to podcasts at work, and you all's is one of the first I found. I am a heavy equipment operator, so I'm able to listen to about 5 to 6 hours worth of episodes a day, and I have officially purchased my first vacation home in the rabbit hole. Pretty neat.
Got a timeshare there myself.
Right. And so Hunter says, anyways, the reason I'm emailing you all is because I just listened to the strange news segment about super pigs. I live in Oklahoma, and the wild pig problem is out of hand. We've got about 1,500 acres of land in southeast Oklahoma that we use primarily for hunting, fishing, camping, etc. On the property, we have 5 pig traps, which Hunter has emailed us photos of these. We have about 5 pig traps equipped with game cameras that are connected to an antenna that will send an image straight to our cell phones anytime there is movement. The coolest part is that the traps are connected as well. So, for instance, if we are at home, which is 70 miles or so away, and we receive an image of pigs in the trap, we're able to drop the trap and contain them with the push of a button. Side note, this is something we'll go back to when we're talking about this. Usually, says Hunter, we place a pile of corn in the middle of the trap, and it's not unusual to trap 30 to 40 pigs at a time. At this point, it's just a matter of disposing of the pigs in the easiest way possible. Some people may see this as harsh, but if you ever come into contact with one of the larger pigs that have 4 to 5 inch tusks, I feel you'll change your mind pretty quick. Just to show how bad it is, we trapped and killed over 300 hogs from our property alone each year for the past 3 years. It's 900 pigs for those of us playing along at home. They cause tremendous amounts of damage to the terrain, to crops, to wildlife, and desperately need to be eradicated. I'll share some pictures for reference in a separate email to put this into perspective. Like I said, I love the show, and you guys do a great job covering all sorts of topics, keeping it interesting. Well, thank you, Hunter. First off, first questions. When we were talking about super pigs, did you guys do any digging?
Any rooting?
Yeah, any truffle
for
rooting?
Super pig truffles?
After we talked about this?
Yeah, I sent my dogs out, and they were unsuccessful.
It was you who let the dogs out.
It was me. Matt. In fact, it was Matt. Me. I take full responsibility.
You got to be careful with them dogs. The guys I reference a lot, and I always forget their individual names, but the Internet Today YouTube guys who are awesome, they did a kind of follow-up on this story and talked about, I think, seeing some footage, or maybe it was just a description from a hunter who, like, unloaded on one of these things, and, like, it just kind of kept running at them. Like, they finally did manage to kill one of them, but it's, like, they're so fatty, and their hide is so, tough, that they practically can deflect bullets.
Right, which we talk about a little bit in our previous strange news segment on this, the sheer tenacity and toughness of these creatures. Of course, I've said it before, we've all said it before on this show, we pretty much love to some degree every living organism. You know, some things aren't our favorites. You know, I know sloths creep some people out. Noel doesn't. Cotton to birds. I feel sorry for possums. I'll say it. That's a weird one. But these animals are a huge threat to the North American continent. And our pal, Hunter, codename Jägermeister, hit us up with photographs of some recently killed hogs on their land, and also showed us a picture of the trap. And when Hunter sent us the next email, they said, these are pictures of a hog I killed from a deer blind. For anybody who's not familiar with hunting, that is a spot where you can set up and wait for the prey to come to you. Mm-hmm. Hunter says,
yeah, you're not blind. The deer is blind.
Right.
To your presence.
Right. And Hunter does something that we love, which is giving us photographic evidence with a clear way to get a sense of perspective.
So Hunter says, just for reference, that's my size 13 boot next to this animal's head. I am a large man, 6'3", 350 pounds, and it took everything I had to drag it into the woods. My best estimate would be that this weighs between 350 and 400 pounds. To your question earlier, Noel, they are extremely tough animals. Hunter says it took 3 shots to kill this hog, and two of those were headshots, and it just kept going.
That's insane. I mean, again, we referenced Game of Thrones, I think, or Song of Ice and Fire in the previous discussion about this, too, because that's what killed, spoiler alert, I guess, Robert Baratheon. He was an avid boar hunter. And yeah, I mean, those things are no joke, even like the regular ones.
He got stove in that show.
He got stove.
Yeah. Yes, I love that. Yeah, he got stove. But the issue is that we've received correspondence from multiple people across multiple platforms who are saying, yes, this is a real problem. And I went over on Twitter when I saw a couple of friends on there saying that they feel like they owe an apology to that 40 to 50 feral hogs guy from so long ago. And you know what? We mentioned this previously, but you know what, folks? That apology might be deserved at this point, because these things are a menace, and not in a cool, wholesome Dennis the Menace way. Like, there really are symptoms of tremendous ecological shifts on a paradigm level. And these creatures are part of it. I feel like it's very cold to say that they have to be eradicated, but I don't know about you, Matt, Noel, codename Doc. I am tempted to agree with Hunter here.
Tempted, indeed. Perhaps convinced. Yeah, these things seem absolutely terrifying.
We had on-the-ground reports I saw about just how quick they are as well, because they're quite clever. So there are some forms of traps that are not fast enough to catch them. The way I heard it described by one person with experience who doesn't want to go on record was that they had kind of like a corral. Or what was it? You mentioned it last week, Matt, the Judas.
Yeah, the Judas pig.
Yeah. So apparently the Judas pig thing is still kind of dodgy, because when that trap drops, the group of super pigs is fast enough and alert enough to immediately pivot. And a lot of them escape before the thing drops. So like they see one frame of movement and they're out the door.
Wow. That's impressive reaction time. The Judas pig was just sending in a rogue pig, right? To find them all. Okay. And then there's a specific trap that you would use to get them.
You have to get the group. And like we said previously in our weekly strange news segment, we're hitting the road for some stuff. That's a bit of a secret project as a group. A series of secret projects. So we're going to keep this a little bit short, but keep your super pig stories coming. Tell us about more invasive species. And we do have to give one bit of regrettable news for all of us who had the same question when you were listening last week. Is the bacon good? Now, I know that's a petty question, because we're talking about ecological collapse. We're talking about the very dangerous invasive species, but we are, you know, we're bacon lovers. So we asked that question, and everybody who has written to us has answered unanimously. There is a consensus. We'll go to Hunter again. Do not eat the pigs. The meat is super tough. It tastes horrible. It has a smell that is, quote, amazingly off-putting. So we're not even getting bacon out of this. This is why earlier
crow.
Yeah.
Or something.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Of course we're getting bacon out of this. Look, if it comes down to it, that gamey, off-putting smell and taste is going to be delicious to you. I promise.
I mean, I've eaten durian. Actually,
doesn't durian taste good? It just smells gross.
It's the smell mainly. It's the smell. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if, as COVID removed a lot of people's olfactory abilities, if durian became more popular. And hey, Matt, I think we're on the same page.
Once super COVID's here, that's going to be the best thing you've ever tasted in your life. I promise.
so, So this also reminds me of one more question. Folks, tell us your invasive species stories, because I've been looking into this. The pig story really, it got to me, man. And I started looking at the history of invasive species, like starlings in the United States, certain types of fish and so on. And I think about this when I'm abroad and I see countries having very, very strict laws about what can be taken in or out of their environments. And I'm starting to think there's a Stuff They Don't Want You to Know episode here. But for that, we need your help. Let us know about invasive species in your neck of the global woods. And, you know, let us know the weirdest thing you've ever eaten. Because I think it's safe to say we're omnivores, right, here. Did you guys ever have any lines, any dietary lines where you said, no, I'm not going
to
try it?
No. I mean, I've started to think a little bit better of eating cephalopods just because they're, you know, so intelligent and they feel pain. I mean, I'm sure most species feel pain, but it seems a bit on the cruel side. So and no more pulpo for me.
Yeah, I hate it. I remember the exact day. The last day I ate an octopus was, I think,
yesterday.
Was March.
Oh, no, sorry.
It was March 20. It was March 2019. Now, if you have to eat something to survive, then I'm of the mind that you absolutely should. Taboos be damned. But if you can avoid it, yeah, that's nice. What about you, Matt? What's a weird thing you've eaten?
Weird thing I've eaten?
Ooh, honestly, do it as a musical. Yeah.
I don't have many things to say, honestly. I kind of steer clear of the stuff that is off-putting to me. That doesn't mean I'm not an adventurous eater, because I love new flavors and new combinations.
You like the spice, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Oh, but yeah. I'm not down. I don't know. I'm okay with being a little bit ignorant of like delicacies of other cultures. I'm kind of okay with that.
Sure. And the reason Noel is referencing the spice is because we've been on the road together and we have seen Matt negotiate with restaurants to make sure that they understand he can take the full amount of heat.
Happened on Monday. I went and got some, what do they call, poblano rellenos? I think is what they
Chili's
call them.
Chili's rellenos.
Yeah. It is chili relleno, but it was a specific type at this restaurant near me. And I talked to the guy who I think was the manager, maybe part owner. We were just talking and he's like, oh, you like spicy stuff, huh? I was like, yeah. And he said, I just made this special oil and spice mixture, and I'm going to give you some. Like, okay, that sounds awesome. Leave, wait for a little while, come back in, pick up my food. He gives me one of these small, like, mason jars. It's a tiny little mason jar, and it is filled to the brim with chili oil and peppers and stuff.
Ooh! Uh-huh.
Guys.
Sweating just thinking about it.
Yeah, did you try it?
It was heaven. It was amazing.
Hell.
It is also amazing to, I don't know about you, Noel, but for me, it's amazing to watch Matt eat spicy food. It's like very...
Tears fall, the mucus comes out, and I'm just smiling.
Yeah, you look weirdly like you got a rictus grin, or you look very stoic.
And
will send us messages from beyond the Scoville scale.
You'd be a great Hot Ones guest, Matt.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Except
that's a
for
great
the part
idea.
Where you have to be interviewed about interesting stuff you've done. Because, whoops, sorry.
Oh, come on.
But I can
give you a break.
Oh, you know what? We're going to an ad break. And if the super pigs don't get us, we'll be back with more messages from you.
They like bust through the door. That's how we end the episode.
They're huge, man. It's scary.
Yeah.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and we are going to a message sent to us from, I guess we call this person Sammy.
Okay.
Yep. It's a message from Sammy. And Sammy, I'm going to read the little insert you put at the top of this message because I think it's funny and we're going to analyze it. Quote, insert. I believe this email account's nominal purpose is to make Google's information scratching software as suspicious as possible about who I'm emailing. That's, of course, a reference to conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com, our email address.
I remember you, Sammy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, we're just going to send an email to a thing called conspiracy at something. Oh, boy. All right. Well, that was not the purpose. It was a shortened version of stuff they don't want you to know that wasn't also stididwick@gmail.com or whatever.
Stididwick. To our earlier conversation about acronyms, you know, who are we to judge at this point?
Exactly.
Stididwick.
So yeah, conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com is what you got. You're continuing here, Sammy. Anyway, Australian and Spanish scientists have discovered how to manipulate time for subatomic particles. Mind you, it's nothing as buck wild as conventional time travel, but I believe we're seeing the birth of a brand new technological field. And then Sammy sent us 2 articles, a Popular Mechanics article. We'll start there and then we'll go to the next one. The Popular Mechanics article is titled, Scientists Discovered How to Speed Up Time. Seriously.
Seriously.
We can reverse it, too. That's the subtitle. It's written by Darren Orff. It was published on the 23rd of February, 2023. Guys, we are entering into a realm here, much like the time crystals, much like other subatomic particle topics that we've covered in the past, that are just beyond my meager understanding of the world, its physics, how everything functions. But we're going to try and get through this one because this is a fascinating topic. Sammy, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you, Sam.
I'm going to start with a bit of an analogy here. And it's something that is done in Popular Mechanics because it did help me get a bit of an understanding. Imagine the way a film works a movie, when you go to the movie theater, you are sitting in a theater and the film is just projected in front of you. The film begins at its starting point, wherever that reel is, the first previews, or the entire movie itself, depending on how many reels it is. It plays out through its entirety, and then it ends after the credits, and it's done. Okay?
All right.
Imagine that is time as we experience it. Moving forward through it. It begins when you're born. That's when your time starts, it begins the moment you're formed as an egg, which, you know, we don't want to take this too far, but you were always in your mother the entire time she was alive.
Hey, watch
it. And
then
it goes back all the way. And hey, if you think about it too hard, your brain's going to break a little bit. But time for you begins when you are born and it ends when you die. Right. And it's one thing. That's it. That's how you get to experience it.
Defined as the time you can observe personally. Right?
Yes. The way we experience it. Right. As humans. So that's that. That's a movie theater. That's time for us. Now imagine watching something on a streaming service like a Netflix or a Peacock, if you will. With that, you want to watch the same movie that we were just talking about in the theater. Let's say Evil Dead 2. That movie is now on Netflix for you, and you can begin it. You can pause it if you want to, and it just stays right there in that state until you're ready to continue. You could rewind, watch something else, see it in a different state. You could fast forward, watch the ending first if you wanted to, see how it ends, and then go back to the beginning and watch that part. You have control over time, essentially, in this way. This is what scientists have figured out how to do with subatomic particles that are quantumly linked, I think. Entangled.
Entangled.
Get out of town.
Entangled.
Yeah. Okay. My brain already hurts. You guys probably don't understand what the heck I'm talking about. I know I'm not coherent right now. You can tell by the beep that I just made, guys. We could just try and read some of this and see if it sticks.
Yeah, let's give everybody a couple of guardrails here, because this gets really weird really quickly. So you beautifully established quantum entanglement, which is true, and is a known thing. We should also establish that time gets very tricky at very, very small scales. And this is where the problem of observation comes in, right? Everybody's heard the old science experiment where light functions as a wave or a series of particles, depending on it, you know, if someone is looking at it, which is nuts. But in quantum mechanics, observing a system can cause it to change just by the nature of a focused consciousness on that, which I know sounds crazy and very woo-woo, but it's also very true. No, I don't like it.
No, I do.
It. Whatever.
Come on, come on, come
whatever.
On.
All right. Okay, Matt. So we got our guide rails. What's going on here? What does everybody need to know when they want to rewind time and not be late for work?
Okay.
Oh, wait, are we there yet? No,
I don't know. I don't know anything. The flat circle is just not as flat as I thought it was. Okay. So there are a bunch of researchers. One of the researchers is Miguel Navasquez, which this person is with the OAW, which is the Austrian Academy of Sciences.
Okay.
We're also dealing with the University of Vienna and a few other groups that are doing all this stuff. These researchers, I'm going to directly quote from this article here from Darren Orff. The researchers achieved this thing, being able to manipulate time within a quantum system, by, quote, evolving a single photon as it passes through a crystal using an experimental device called a quantum switch. The single photon of light returns to its previous state before it ever makes the journey through the crystal. What? Darren continues, in a way, this is less Doc Brown-style time travel and more about reverting or otherwise altering the states of quantum particles, or, quote, time translation.
Ooh.
What the hell, guys? I don't...
Okay. All right.
Is this related to time dilation as well? Is that like the opposite?
Sure. It's the exact same thing. I have no idea. No,
I don't know. I just, it's a term I've heard. I just thought I'd throw it out there. this is that timey-wimey stuff Doctor Who was talking about, huh?
Oh, God, it gets weirder, guys. Continuing from Darren's article, in quantum mechanics, simply observing a system causes it to change, which makes it impossible to track a system's progress through time. Well, then how do we know that this is what happened? Okay, crucially, these rewinding protocols still work because they can be performed without knowing what the changes were or its internal dynamics, according to the scientists. Also, according to the scientists, cheese isn't real. No, I'm just joking.
What about birds? No, they're there. They're out there. Look up the harpy eagle if you are scared of birds. It looks like a dude in a suit dressed as a bird. But, okay.
It makes me feel so dumb, guys.
Well, we're right there with you. No one here on this show right now is a physicist. We may have some in the audience. And if you are a conspiracy realist who has experience in physics and quantum mechanics, please feel free to write in and help us put this in more understandable terms. Like, help us out. We do, by way, speaking of scientists here, Matt, I do think it's important for us to avoid some of the mistakes that pop science makes in reporting, because you can see these kind of breathless, hyperbolic headlines at times. But I think it's crucial for us to note, from my understanding at least, the scientists involved in this research are not trying to specifically prove that these subatomic particles, these neutrinos, are traveling faster than the speed of light. They're trying to figure out why their data looks so weird. Is that correct? Like, they haven't made any crazy, crazy claims other than, you know, the claims you just outlined, which are pretty crazy for me and also brain breaking.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. Here's another thing from this same article. This is an example that's given by these researchers. Let's say you've got 10 of these quantum systems that they've built, right? 10 of them. Each one of those 10 is running an experiment that's going to run for 10 years nonstop. It's going to run this experiment for 10 years. They're saying in this system, if you wanted to have one of those 10-year-long experiments run for 10 years within the span of 1 year, so basically accelerate the time of that system, they could theoretically pull 1 year from each of the other 9 systems and funnel it into the one system, so that this one system essentially evolves or runs that experiment for the span of 10 years, just condensed into one actual human year. Which
I understood some of those words.
Yeah. Okay. So theoretically, all this is really doing, it's in the final paragraph of this article, the point isn't jetting off to the distant future of 2015, as in like going back to the future to 2015, the ability to increase the capability of quantum processors by arming them with the possibility of reversing errors in a system. Now, that's really interesting to me. So if we're talking about a quantum computing system, right, and it's running, doing a bunch of processes, going, and it made an error or a couple of errors, the idea that it could somehow... the system itself could somehow go back in time while it's still processing up here, you know, at the leading edge of time. It can go back and fix those processes simultaneously or something like that. Maybe that's super dumbing down of what's being said here, but I don't freaking know.
No, you know what? I need to correct myself as well here, man, because I'm realizing now that I was referring to a different experiment, which is older. In this series of experiments, our Austrian friends have proven that it's possible to accelerate, decelerate, and reverse the flow of time. So they got there. This is okay. So the weird thing is, this is still exploration of the natural world, right? Just at a very, very small level. Like, they're observing processes that have already been occurring. They didn't make something new. They just figured out how to see it. Is that correct?
Sure.
What is a quantum switch?
Stop. Listen, this is a call. This is a call to physicists out there. Does anyone specialize in this? Can anyone dumb this down for some guys who, honestly, I feel like we have some pretty intellectual conversations about complicated and complex stuff, but I still can't wrap my head around this at all.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I am always trying to learn more about something, and I'm transparent here when I say this is still hard, at least for me, to grasp. So if you are an expert in the potential of quote-unquote time travel with subatomic particles, please do us a favor and send us an email before we record this episode.
Yep. Yeah, please. God, please. Ah, please. This feels like the kind of research and understanding of the physical world and, you know, subatomic world that happens right before everything collapses, you know, because it's collapsed like seven times before this. I think this is what happens every time.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. Experts, send us an email before we record this conversation.
Oh, dude.
Right.
All right. Well, that's all I've got, guys. I'm sorry, Sammy, we failed you. Let's point to another article here. You can find in El País, PEL PAIS, very big journalism outlet here. It's in their Science and Tech. In English, it is titled, "We Have Made Science Fiction Come True. Scientists Prove Particles in a Quantum System Can Be Rejuvenated."
And so can dreams.
Yes.
Be rejuvenated and also come true.
That's it. Here are our sponsors.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we've returned for a fun thing we're going to do that Ben teased earlier. We're going to hear from a listener, but then we're going to open up the conversation to talk a little bit about the spooky movies that we all like. It's kind of perma Halloween here, like Ben said, at Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. So let me pull up this here email from Joe, who says, "Hi, everyone. I'm sure this is probably already on your radars if you're horror movie fans, but I just finished the episode you did on sleep paralysis and shadow people and other fun sleep stuffs. If you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend the film Skinamarink. It plays like a fever dream when you're a little kid. It goes to some pretty horrifying places involving small kids, so parents for sure beware. But it is one of the more unique horror movies I've seen in a while. Boy, howdy, it's a tough watch, but really good, I think. Love the show. It keeps me company during the day. Love, peace, and cash." That's cool. I'll take some of that, Joe. Ben, I believe you saw Skinamarink. I've been hearing a lot about it, both good and bad, which is, I think, the case for a lot of sort of odder or maybe unusual horror films, like one that I really like called Everyone's Going to the World's Fair. People either loved it or hated it. It was kind of lo-fi webcam-y stuff. And I think this one is kind of looks a little bit like Paranormal Activities, but it is about some kids that wake up in a pretty horrifying situation where like they don't have windows in their house anymore and their parents are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it. So the primary figures are Kevin and Kaylee, two siblings, and the entire thing has a nightmarish fever dream vibe. Don't want to ruin too much of it, but you already have seen probably some commentary on this, folks, about analogs for child abuse and very, very disturbing, difficult stuff. I can see how this would be divisive for some people. It's definitely not a film that you would just put on in the background and have fun with. Some people found it profoundly disturbing. Some people loved it. Some people found it just sort of lackluster. But for anybody who has listened to our episodes on the nature of dreams, this would be very interesting. I mean, we've been pretty fortunate, haven't we, to have so much amazing horror coming out in recent years. Are you guys planning to see Skinamarink?
No, I'm not.
I would
not
like to
do
see
it.
No?
Mm-mm.
Little kid stuff kind of gets you?
So my understanding is that there's some harm to children in it, and I don't want to go through that.
Understood. Yeah, but there's an interesting story here because the guy who created this, Kyle Edward Ball, had a YouTube channel, or I think still has, where people would comment and tell him about their nightmares, and then he would make short videos based on those stories. And I believe Skinamarink comes from that. And to your point, Noel, about it seeming kind of lo-fi for people, I think the budget was something like $15,000, which is huge for an individual person, but very, very bootstrap and shoestring for a film. Actually, our super producer, codenamed Doc Holliday, is, when she's not slumming it with us, she is a big wheel in the world of production. So I think could probably confirm $15,000 as a total budget for film is, it's not that much, right?
For a feature or for, it's for a feature?
It's a feature, yeah.
Oh, no.
That's a micro nothing. Budget.
Yeah, $15,000,
that's a fucking light. That's a lens.
That's,
you know,
like craft, I mean, services.
It's one person, yeah, with a camera that they already own and two kids that are just friends and want to make a fun movie with their pal.
And like a cat pulling focus.
Yep, definitely.
Like a literal feline.
It really does remind me of like the, you know, kind of found footage craze that got pretty annoying pretty quick. You know, I mean, obviously Paranormal Activities was made on a micro budget as well. I don't remember the exact number. I think it was probably more than that, though, but definitely given the amount of money that movie made and how many, you know, offshoots it spawned and copycats. I mean, that was a huge deal. This seems a lot more creative than Paranormal Activity. I'm not really a fan of those movies. I haven't seen it, so I can't really say. But it's interesting, though. I think some people, you know, horror fans in particular, can be a little bit petulant, if I'm being completely honest, or pedantic maybe is a better word. That's a much better word in terms of like what constitutes a horror movie and kind of what they're expecting. And so a lot of times if you see divisive reviews for movies like this, sometimes the division comes from like, you know, the horror community, maybe while critics are giving it good reviews. So that's a thing that I've seen. It seems like a lot of the more up there critics like New York Times and stuff have been pretty favorable about this. And it's definitely making some noise. But I have seen some, you know, Rotten Tomatoes user reviews saying, don't believe the hype. It's totally boring. And but then again, I saw some very similar reactions to that film I was talking about. Everyone's going to the World's Fair or we're all going to the World's Fair. And I loved that movie and did find it unsettling, and it really didn't match up with the zeitgeisty thing, which is like kind of chronically online, you know, Xennials or whatever that group is called.
Could you give everybody like the kind of the high level description of everybody's coming to the World's Fair?
Yeah, it's like a creepypasta kind of thing where you're experiencing it through the eyes and literally the webcam and these kind of confessional, you know, web diaries of the main protagonist. And there's this creepypasta challenge where you go online and you make a video where you say, we're all going to the World's Fair a bunch of times. And then you play this like this weird kind of epilepsy inducing, you know, potentially video clip. It's like the series of flashing lights. And the whole time, I don't want to give anything away, but you're not quite sure if like it's working. And like she's kind of commenting on like she's feeling these transformations. You don't really know what it's supposed to do. But there's also these, you know, cutaways to other people doing the challenge. And some of them clearly being made by folks that are like doing kind of cool DIY VFX kind of stuff. And, you know, again, you don't know if some of these are supposed to be real. Some of them are clearly just good After Effects work. And that's sort of the point. But it progresses and it's a lot of like, is she, isn't she kind of, you know, actually turning into something demonic or whatever it might be. And that's all I'm going to say, but it is all shot through webcam footage. And at some point there's like some black light face paint stuff that really is unsettling. It's if you've seen the poster of the film, then that's what you're seeing. And it's got a really cool soundtrack or score by the kind of indie artist Alex G. And I loved it. I thought it was really cool. And I hope to love Skinamarink as well, because some folks that I whose opinions I value did like it, but then some folks whose opinions I value also trashed it. So hard to say.
My understanding is that it's a highly disturbing, almost intellectual depiction of childhood domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that's why I'm saying I don't want to see it, because that to me is probably the most horrifying thing I can imagine.
I somehow bet that it, like, a lot of things happen off camera or are implied, well, especially given the budget and stuff, but I can't say because I haven't. Ben, can you speak to, without spoiling it, like, how graphic is it?
Well, there are, you know, Hitchcock was right when he said keep the monsters are scarier when they're off screen to a totally large degree. So there are sections, just as a trigger warning, that hint it is about child abuse. That's probably the best way to say it, the most fair without spoiling. But also you might be saying, hey folks, why are you just talking about movies in a show that is for conspiracy realists and examines the stuff they don't want you to know? Well, I would posit that unfortunately for many people, domestic abuse is a grand conspiracy. So while I understand 100% that this can be incredibly uncomfortable, and rightly so, it is also something that happens to people. And as such, I feel like should be explored.
It's not for nothing too that we try to do trigger warnings just around thematic content that could, just discussing something like this, could be triggering for certain folks that maybe experienced it without having to have any graphic descriptions at all. So even if a movie, you know, a good film and a good horror film kind of takes you psychologically to a place, and if maybe you're not signed up for that going in, even if there are no actual on-screen depictions of violence toward children, just the thematic elements of it, and if it's done well, could be troubling in a way that you don't want to be a part of, you know? And I think that's true of things like films depicting school shooters, for example. You know, while a lot of the maybe better ones, that stuff doesn't happen on screen at all. That stuff's it's off screen. You know, the violence actually happens off screen, but it's still something very triggering for anyone because it's all about atmosphere, you know? And it seems to me like this movie is Skinamarink, rather, and also World's Fair are very atmosphere driven films. And that's what you have to do with a micro budget like that. It's all about atmosphere. And that's, I think, to me, the magic of cinema when it's done well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you see divisiveness in other films that approach very uncomfortable things. I can't remember when we talked about it on air, but off air, another film in the conspiracy horror genre is Hereditary. And Hereditary, mm-hmm, is
hella triggering.
Yeah, because it was originally written entirely as a harrowing story about a family trying to navigate and process grief when one of their children dies. Spoiler. And if you read interviews, the creator of that universe is pretty upfront by saying, look, I had this story. It's a very powerful, disturbing story about families navigating grief. And I couldn't sell it, so I made it a horror film and added supernatural elements.
And I think to some folks hearing that, they might eye roll or something, be like, oh, is you just shoehorned in all this spooky stuff? That is not what that movie is.
No,
I would never have known this or guessed that in a million years, because it all just feels like it was, you know, crafted at once. You know, I think that movie is brilliant and brilliantly disturbing. And also some of the scariest parts in it aren't the horrific scenes, which there are plenty of that are actually very gory and violent. Yeah, dude. Ooh. But just the grief part, you know, the idea of losing a child and just the absolute unhinged grief that Toni Collette displays. I mean, and it's such a bummer that, I mean, I don't give a crap about the Academy Awards, really. It's just more of like a interesting metric for like movies that are, you know, that are doing cool stuff. But I'm more interested in maybe some of the lesser, you know, European like film festivals that maybe give stuff to stuff that's a little more deserving. But Toni Collette should have been nominated for an Oscar for that performance. But the Academy don't mess with horror movies.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
You know what else should have gotten an Academy Award?
What's that?
Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness. Yes. The harrowing, nuanced depiction of, you know, life in the modern industrial age. That's how right. Much do we need machines before we become machines?
Sir, that movie takes place in the medieval era, okay?
It does.
I know. It's like, I'm saying there are levels to it, you know? Just like yeah. Like you see it in its spiritual successor, the unofficial sequel, Police Academy 4.
Ah. Oh,
all of those, yeah. Those were snubbed by the Academy unfairly, I would say. But yeah, Army of Darkness is neat, though, and I know you're kind of half-joking, but, like, the style of VFX in that movie and, like, the whole, like, Ray Harryhausen kind of nods, like, with the, you know, what is it, Jason and the Argonauts, the kind of, like, hand-done, bespoke, stop-motion. It doesn't age well, but they do it such a way. I mean, when I say it doesn't age well, I mean, compared to, like, more modern stuff. But it looks so cool because it's, like, real skeletons that are moving one little, you know, frame at a time. And I just think it's great. And all of the practical makeup effects and things that are in that movie. Sam Raimi's awesome. And then, of course, you know, he went on to do all the big Spider-Man movies. And stuff.
I'm just saying, he knew what he was doing. I want to have some fun with my horror movies. You know, mm-hmm. I love existential horror. I love really scary things and monsters and all that stuff. I just don't want it to be like a full-on all-encompassing downer to the point where my brain
misery
is broken
fest.
And yeah. I'm just like, I want it to be, yeah. you know, give me some sugar, baby, and those kind of one-liners and all that stuff.
Yeah,
like, come
I
on.
Love that. Like I love slapstick horror, you know, The Shining, The Witch, like the Carnival of Souls, you know what I mean? Give me some laughs.
pratfalls. Give me pratfalls. Right. Now, those are, well, obviously, if anyone isn't aware, those are very intense, dramatic horror movies that Ben just named.
Eye of the Beholder, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, well, one that I was going to bring up that is absolutely not for the faint of heart, but still uses all these practical effects. I think I maybe mentioned it briefly before. A Taiwanese horror film called The Sadness, which is so over the top and cartoonishly gory that it eventually desensitizes you to it a bit. And then they'll just up the ante, you know, even further. It is not for the faint of heart. I watched it with my girlfriend, who has this rule that she'll never not watch a movie like to its completion. And this was apparently the biggest slog for her ever of anything that I've forced her to watch.
Oh, I do the 10-minute rule. I give it 10 minutes.
Yeah, and that's fair, but my partner can't do that. They okay. can't do that.
All respect.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, I don't believe in the sunk cost fallacy either, but that's just differences in our personalities. And she did make it all the way through, but this is it's a zombie film where the zombies are like mega, mega fast. And they aren't just mindless, like flesh and brain seekers. They essentially become victim to the most despicable, violent impulses that any human being could be capable of. And the kicker is the name The Sadness comes from the fact that they, anyone that's been infected, it's a virus situation, infected by this, their real personality is somewhere deep down in there watching the whole thing. And so all of the zombies, quote unquote, are like weeping. And that is their internal voice of reason and morality just being horrified by what their body is doing.
Well, good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. We hope you sleep well. By the way, if you started listening to this episode not knowing this was on the way, oh, your dreams.
Send me descriptions of your nightmares. Send it to us. I want to hear about your dreams, but only if they're scary. That's going to be great out of context quote. We know a lot of us in the audience today, a lot of us are fans of horror. And, you know, sometimes critics will dunk on genre film, just like they'll dunk on, you know, genre books or whatever. But horror seems to play, I would say, an incredibly important role in human society. You know, it's a new way for people to explore things that are sometimes taboo, sometimes not spoken about. And it's a mirror that you can hold up to yourself, you know, which I don't know. It sounds like cliche. Let's get out of here. Before I get all fortune cookie style and I'm like, oh, the journey of the 1,000 films begins with, you know, the first play button. Oh my God. Never mind.
No. What are some of your favorite horror movies? We'd love to know. I think we're all into it, invested in various ways. You can write to us. You can reach out to us in various ways as well. On the internet, for example, we are Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitter. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
And if you like to use your phone to call people, which is apparently not something many people like to do anymore, as I have learned from my colleagues. Sorry, guys. That's my bad. I like to call them way more than they're comfortable with me calling them. And it's okay.
No, you're fine. I have a very short list. You're on it. And I think I sent you all that list one time.
That's right. But if you like to do that, why not give us a call? Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a nickname. And then you've got 3 minutes. Tell us whatever you'd like. But again, only 3 minutes. Please make sure to let us know if we can use your message and your voice on one of our listener mail episodes. And that's really it. If you don't want to call, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenas, buenas, mis amores. This is Vico Ortiz, host of Date My Abuelita First. Each week, myself, alongside our resident abuelita, Liliana Montenegro.
Esa soy yo.
Play matchmaker for a group of hopeful romantics in this fun, flirty, and hilarious game show. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps. Listen to Date My Abuelita First on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.